Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat Podcast, the number one podcast for learning and talent development professionals. Now here's your host, Andy Storch.
Welcome to the Talent Development Hot Seat Podcast. I am your host, Andy Storch, and I'm excited that you're joining me today for another great episode and conversation to help you up your game and improve your capabilities in the world of talent development. And there's a lot of different categories and things we can talk about in the world of talent development, but I think one of the most common that people are working on and talking about in this day and age, these days, is leadership development. How do we develop our leaders so that they are capable of managing, developing their own people and really leading us into the future of work and really taking care of our workforce? Because we know that the leaders of our organization have such a huge impact over overall culture and ability to go out and implement the strategy of the organization. If our leaders are not good at translating strategy, at developing people, at managing people, then at worst, the strategy is not really going to get done. And even worse than that, everybody's going to leave, right? Because we know that attrition often is tied to the quality of a leader and how well they are managing people. And so I've been doing a lot of interviews lately with people about leaders, leadership and leadership development. Part of it is I'm really curious, but mostly because I know that many of you are working on these leadership development programs. We've been doing some sessions inside the think tank community about this as well, and we'll have more great stuff coming in the future. And today is a really great episode and conversation for those of you who are building, developing, updating leadership development programs, because on today we're going to kind of deep dive into the components of a leadership development program at a really large health insurance provider. Jennifer Butler is the Director of Leadership Development at Elevance Health, which is a healthcare and insurance provider with over 100,000 employees globally. And Jennifer's been working in this space, starting out in the business and working in talent development for nearly 25 years with leaders of all levels who have really appreciated the work that she has done and brought and the connections that she brings. She pulls from a range of leadership concepts to create experiences to help teams deliver on their goals, and is really a passionate nerd when it comes to all things leadership development. Jennifer started her career with Target Corporation after attending in-person interviews in January in Minneapolis, which I'll ask her about. And during her tenure with Target, she was asked to join the training team in support of the Business Analyst Training Program. And it was in that role that she realized she is at her best when she is business adjacent, meaning enabling the people and teams delivering profit. And in 2012, she returned to Indiana and joined Roche Diagnostics. And then just a few years later, joined the team at Elevance Health, where she has been working on leadership development over the last few years. Jennifer's also a big believer in concepts around StrengthsFinder from Gallup and Multipliers from the Weizmann's Group. By the way, if you haven't heard of Multipliers, that's a program that I used to run quite a bit before I went out on my own, and one that I'm still a big fan of. And something I didn't get to ask Jennifer about, but I will in the future, is that she was named Most Improved Handwriting in 1988 from Klondike Elementary School. I'll definitely have to ask her about that in the future. But what I do ask her about in this interview are things like her background and how she got into this space, what she learned from going through Target's development program when she started there, how she and her team thought about assessing the needs at Elevance before building the latest leadership development programs, how they think about leveraging strengths and using things like 360 analysis tools and assessment tools, positioning leadership development as a valuable component of the business, you know, how they thought about bringing in vendor partners versus building things internally, so build versus buy, I guess you would say, and the approach they took and how they thought about things like bringing people together in person versus doing things remotely or virtually or hybrid or on demand, as well as how they scale to so many people across such a large organization. So many great things that we cover in this conversation. If you're working on leadership development at all, you're going to get some good ideas from this one. So make sure you get your notepads ready. I want to remind you also that this podcast is sponsored by the Talent Development Think Tank Conference and Community. This is something I started back in 2020, really started back in 2019, to bring people together in the talent development space in an innovative and creative way to help people really connect and learn from each other. We're still going strong with our membership community, having calls every month, and we're bringing Jennifer in to be a guest speaker this summer to talk more about leadership development. So make sure you check that out. And We are bringing people together in person for our third annual conference this November 2024. You can find all the information on our website at tdtt.us. That's tdtt.us. You can click on community, you can click on conference, and you can use the code HOTSEAT, HOTSEAT, for 10% off your purchase. So make sure you go check that out. Use that discount code. Reach out to me if you have any questions. Otherwise, without further ado, here is my conversation with Jennifer Butler about leadership development programs at Elevance Health. Enjoy. All right. I'm joined now by Jennifer Butler, the Director of Leadership Development at Elevance Health. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, really excited to have you on. You and I have had some great conversations over the last couple of years, I would say, as we've done a little bit of work together and talked here and there. And I know in that time, you and your team have successfully launched a couple different leadership development programs. And I'm excited to dig into that because it seems like everybody I talk to in, you know, talent development these days is working on some form of a new leadership development program at different levels. So I think that's going to be really helpful. But I always like to start with a little bit of background before we get into that. And I understand that you, even though you went to school in the Midwest and you were already pretty familiar with cold, that you actually started your career by going to some in-person interviews in Minneapolis, Minnesota in the winter, and you still took a job up there. Is that right?
I did. It was a real indicator of my willingness to get out of Indiana, is what I would say. Yes, I went up and did my in-person interviews in the middle of January in Minnesota and said, yep, this is where I want to move. So it's probably a better testament to what Target Corporation and Target offered as a, yeah, you know, right out of college. But
I would imagine the thought process there was like, yeah, it's really cold, but this is going to be a great job.
It's going to be a great job. And Minneapolis, to give some praise to Minneapolis, the downtown is all connected to the second story skywalks. It looks like a big gerbil habitat. So it works out well.
Yeah. And it's a really cool city with a lot of great stuff going on. Was that first role in talent development? Is that where you've always had been in your career?
No, not at all. I would be willing to bet I'm the first guest you've had that has a degree in apparel merchandising.
Ooh,
so
yeah,
So I'm usually the only one in most rooms. So I went to Indiana University. I studied apparel merchandising. I remember vividly in high school, I had a job and I realized, I had a job at like a department store. Somebody made the decision of like what on which hook and why. Yeah. And I thought that was fascinating. And so I went to school and that's what I studied. And a couple years into my career, Target was really good about getting you different experiences and moving you around. And a couple of years into my career, a friend of mine said, hey, I'm getting ready to leave this training job. I think you should apply to it. And that was the first time I had somebody kind of tap me and say, I see something in you that aligns with this job and this skill set. And from that point, it took me a few more years. I continued to dabble in the business side and the like training or talent development side. But eventually I realized I was much happier when I was what I say business adjacent. I didn't want to fret about the P&L on Sunday nights, but I wanted to be there for the people Monday morning that did fret about it.
And you come from a background where you understand a lot of the business going into talent development, which is really helpful, I would imagine.
It is. And it's actually one of my biggest pieces of advice for anyone looking for a talent development or even an HR career in general, is there's nothing more valuable than actual business experience. And it's transferable. Once you understand the puts and takes and how to manage a P&L and what goes into that, and also leading human beings alongside of that, it just gives us more credibility when we sit in these talent seats that we're in.
Well, let's make that practical, you know, maybe for people that earlier in their career, they're saying, well, I'm already really drawn to talent development. I want to go work in talent development. How do I get that business experience as well?
It's a great question. And I think the first thing is go out and seek as many opportunities as you can to shadow, to be in those meetings, carve out time to sit in the quarterly business review and find a mentor that can explain to you what the conversation was and what that looks like. And so I think that's part of it. And then I think the other part of it is, what's the operational heartbeat of your organization? If you're a supply chain company, can you go watch the operation and maybe even spend a couple days on the line? If you're a retail organization, go out and reset a planogram over the weekend. In my previous life, we were medical device, and I, a couple times a year, went out with some of our sales teams and met with lab directors to hear what was the reality of their world, because that reality affected the leaders that I was working with. And then it made me better at what I was doing. So if you've already, you're already down this path, you can still take field trips, if you will, right, and immerse yourself in that business.
Yeah. Get out of the ivory towers, as they say, right? And go out to the front lines and see what people are working on, what they're doing, have conversations with people in finance and other parts of the business to find out what you can about how the business works.
And there's no shortage. Look, there's no excuse. Nobody, I tell people all the time, when you're in college, like, nobody ever died taking an accounting class. And there's no shortage of, online or on-demand learning for business acumen and P&L statements. And so dive in and look at that and understand the value chain. And then all that does is make you a better question asker and lets you be more curious when you do engage with your business.
It just reminded me, my summer between freshman and sophomore year in college, I took an accounting class. And
it almost killed you?
It was really boring, but I didn't come close to death. So, yeah. And I got an A. So I guess I learned something. I'm not sure.
Econ, I think macroeconomics is what literally almost killed me. And I did not get an A, but
It was actually chemistry that completely changed my career, which is odd because I was very good at physics and calculus, but I just could not do chemistry at all.
Okay.
And still not near death, but definitely it was a death knell to my dreams of becoming an engineer.
And just to give, some hope to those out there, I've never even taken a calculus class. So you can actually lead a very successful life having never taken calculus.
love that. Yeah, you don't need calculus these days. Plus AI can probably do it for you anyway.
I could throw it into a chat. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I still love math though. But I'm curious, the other thing I love about your story is that there's lots of different ways that people get into talent development. And some of my favorites are when someone's in a different type of role and then a colleague or a manager recognizes that skill in you that, like, hey, you're really good at helping other people understand how to do things. You're really good at training or facilitating or speaking. We should give you more of these opportunities. And I feel like there's still not enough of that happening in the corporate world for leaders to be looking out for and recognizing strengths in people to try to create new roles for them. And I know you are, I think, certified in Strengths Finders. It's something that you're interested in as well. I wonder if that's something you've built in, from your own experience into the programs that you're working on.
Definitely. So we're not currently leveraging strengths directly. But what I would say is, everything in both of the two new HIPO programs that we've built, everything is it's foundationally in turning up the volume, is how I like to say it, on things that people already do well. And so for our manager program, we're using a custom internal 360 that aligns to our leadership characteristics. But I just finished debriefing those with a group of people. And that was my first piece of advice, was go through and find your strengths themes. Find those hidden strengths that are listed on your report. And your first plan should be, how do I do more of that? Do more of that intentionally and tell people I'm doing it intentionally. And I think that telling people is the piece we miss sometimes. We expect folks to just be like, oh, Eureka, Andy's performing differently. And in order to get credit for it, sometimes we have to say, do you notice what I just did? That was on purpose. And then in our executive program, my director and above program, we're using a 360 called the Leadership Circle Profile. And I think the Leadership Circle Profile is really easily connected to StrengthsFinder. And so when you already have that language, or even just an awareness of what you're good at and maybe the values that you bring with that connection, the LCP allows you to take that even further through the coaching that we provide.
I want to talk more about those leadership programs, but one other thing I wanted to ask you about, since you started your career at Target up in Minneapolis, and I feel like Target has a reputation for, hiring a lot of new people, for having a really strong onboarding and development program for new people coming into their careers, rotation programs. What are some things that you learned from going through that and seeing that early in your career?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, it was approximately a million years ago that I started. So anyone at Target that might be listening to this now, I fully understand it might look totally different.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something that really stands out to me and I bring forward in new hire thinking or new leader programs is that blend of in the beginning of an experience, focusing a little more on classroom and then easing or formal learning and then easing people into the on the job. I think sometimes we want to just throw people into the deep end and say, okay, go learn. And what I saw that Target did really well in our business analyst new hire program was we spent the first couple of weeks in an incubator, if you will. We were away from the main business. We kind of knew where we were going to work, but they built skills and they built the corporate skills and the corporate abilities that we needed. And then we slowly started increasing our time that we were working on the job. And that allowed us as the new hires to be confident in what we were doing. It also allowed us to be valuable to the people we were working with. We weren't showing up on day one and not knowing how to log into our computer. We understood the basic math and the retail concepts. I've pulled that same concept forward to a college grad program that I built at my previous company. And then it's also part of ongoing leadership development that I try to put in place is how do we make that blend so that the learner is able to apply a little more quickly? Because at the end of the day, that also just makes our program look that much better.
Yeah, absolutely. And giving people the tools they need to be able to go out and bring value and be effective. So helpful. By the way, I'm just trying to fact check your quote about starting your career a million years ago. I looked it up and Target opened its first store in 1962, which is just what, 70, not quite 70 years ago.
I was not at the first store opening, but it's sometimes it does feel like it.
I figured you probably weren't. I know your approximate age, and I think you probably weren't at that first store opening or even alive for the first store opening. No.
And in fact, I was at Target when we were celebrating the 40th anniversary of the first store. So 2002.
Okay, there you go. All right, a little bit of knowledge. I like it. Yeah. Okay, so now you're at Elevance Health, which is this massive health insurance company, very different from Target, but you're working with, you have a ton of really talented professionals and you need to find ways to develop the leaders, especially, which is in your purview. So take us back to where this started. How did you think about evaluating what was the need and what were you going to go create with regards to leadership development at Elevance?
We had just launched brand new leadership behaviors, we were calling them at the time. And so the first thing we started with the vice presidents and then went to staff vice presidents and directors. And it was a 2-day, we did it in 4-hour pieces, gamified approach of applying our new leadership behaviors to some real life case study work that had, you know, ripped from the headlines, Elevance Health work. That was the first thing we did. Then we started building our leadership workshop portfolio. So those things that are 2 hours, almost anybody can sign up for it. And it's a range of the most widespread topics, right? So we're talking feedback or how to give, you know, how to help others develop their career, what it means to navigate change. So we spent that first year, so in through 2021, getting that built up and building our credibility. And so that was part of it is in the past, we hadn't necessarily as a leadership development or an enterprise function positioned ourselves as valuable components of the business narrative. And so we were really meeting the business where they were, offering them solutions that they said they needed, even if at times we thought, I don't know if that's quite it, but we're like, let's offer it and we'll grow into it. And then it was late 2022 that we were finally ready to put the line in the sand for some high potential programs. In between there, we also built a brand new manager program called People Leader Fundamentals that captures people right when they get that first promotion. We started standing up a couple different academies specific to business areas. So one for operations, one for clinical leadership. We have a very interesting perspective or situation here at Elevance Health that we hire a lot of physicians and nurses and nurse practitioners. And then we drop them into this corporate America jungle. And we don't understand why there's a disconnect or how do we help work through that? And so that's something we've been unpacking. And in fact, that one we're reevaluating right now to really understand the right space. So we slowly added pieces to our approach and people, right? Our team grew to, you know, just leadership development. We're 17 or 18 And that doesn't include our partners in talent infrastructure and our partners in talent management, et cetera. So late 2022, we said we were ready for this high potential solution. Part of it was we realized we had a retention risk if we didn't start doing something to keep these individuals. I know I personally was getting frustrated every time I heard of another case of a really great leader leaving. And their reason was always, well, I got a phone call I couldn't say no to. And I remember thinking, why aren't we the phone call you can't say no to? What are we doing? And so that was the big catalyst, the retention piece. We needed to work on better pipeline for our diversity initiatives and moving our diverse talent further up in their careers. And so those were the big things we were working towards. And there are times that I shake my head that everything this team and this group of people have done in the last not even four years yet, is pretty amazing.
Yeah. You've accomplished a lot in less than 4 years. You're doing great work expanding the team. You mentioned 17 in leadership development. For context, how big is the organization? How many leaders are you working with?
We're about 12,000 people leaders, give or take. We have, it kind of ebbs and flows, and different parts of our organization are different levels of flatness as well.
Mm. And so how did you think about, because what I heard from you, and I remember writing down, we talked before, is you settled on kind of three main levels of development: the leadership essentials, the progressive leadership, and the transitioning leadership, which is the HIPO program at the director plus level, right? How did you settle on these three levels? Because this is what I think a lot of organizations are doing. And yet, 12,000 leaders is a lot. I'm sure there's multiple layers and levels in there, different tracks and types of roles that people could be doing. So how did you end up coming to those?
Yeah. So the ultimate leader of our leadership development portfolio spent about a year. So that's the individual that I report into. She spent about a year seeing what we were offering, what was being asked, and analyzing where the gaps were, and really categorizing the current set of work. And so when we look at that, fundamentals or that foundational leadership or leadership essentials group, what we're seeing there is, how do you prepare people? How do you build those skills that if they don't get it there, then it's a big gap further along. And then in that middle group, that progressing leadership, that was, hey, we're not necessarily talking about moving you into a new role or up, but we want to make you as amazing as possible in the space you're in. So that's kind of that progression of leadership. And then the vertical that I lead, we actually just changed the name to Advancing Leaders, but I lead the Advancing Leadership vertical. And that's around anything where we want to accelerate, where we're attaching a goal and tracking that our participants, are they or are they not moving up, over, stretching, et cetera. I'd also loosely say that our vertical in Advancing Leadership ties a little bit to some of the other HR initiatives. So for example, we have diversity initiatives. That's part of my purview. And that's one of the teams I partner with, where we don't necessarily partner with them in the same way for our general leadership workshops or for our new leader program.
Got it. And so with this Advancing Leadership program, is this the middle lever?
No. Okay. This is the third. This is the, if you're looking, left to right, we're furthest to the right. The other language we've started using is 100, 200, 300 level.
Okay.
And so Advancing Leadership is that 300 level. And we're starting to explore what exists in 400 level, what exists in 500 as well, and still sitting in that same vertical.
Okay. Well, that's good. Go ahead.
Well, the idea would be, if you think about the whole life cycle, you go through our onboarding program, and then a year later, you get promoted to be a people leader. So you go to people leader fundamentals, and then maybe you're in one of our operations space. So then you're going to go through Operations Leadership Academy. And along the way, you've been working on yourself and developing yourself. So your potential is seen as growing. And so once you're identified through that high potential process, then you would be eligible for the items within, or the solutions within, my vertical.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with this advancing leadership program. This is a good place to start. I think this is probably the most common place where organizations are investing in leadership development is at the, maybe not quite the top of the house, but those hypo leaders that could be the executives of the future. How did you approach putting this program together? You know, what are some of the components look like? Because I know there's a lot that goes into it.
There's a lot. So there were a few things. The first and foremost, I established in partnership with our HR leadership, an internal steering committee so that I was able to reflect and gather the business perspective. Mm-hmm. So February 2023, we pulled together about 15 leaders from across our organization, including talent management, and went through a two-day design session. What are the gaps? What do people need? What are you hearing? So that we could really base our solution in the reality of the environment. And we also made sure that there were folks in that room that were brand new to the organization and folks that had been around for a long time, so that we could ensure that we weren't stepping out of line with what's maybe been done in the past, but that we were evolving and bringing new ideas. And it was actually in that design requirement session that one of the participants said, I did something like this at another company, and I walked away saying that was life-changing. Mm. We should have this be life-changing. Mm. And so that's been a bit of our North Star for all the programs. And we say that up front. I don't measure it. I don't ask them after 6 months, is your life changed? But it's also a great rubric for some of the design elements of, yeah, that's a neat idea, but does it support life changing? Mm. So that was kind of our audacious moment. I came out of that design session and turned around and opened a really big RFP. Most people look at me like I'm crazy. So I think we came out of the design session and opened an RFP to 13 different providers, ranging from the academic space to large scale consulting firms, all, and then some smaller boutique firms. And the reason I did that huge approach was I wanted to be able to show the internal stakeholders, the steering committee, even our HR and our talent leadership, a range of options. Mm. Everyone was kind of bringing with them, well, why don't we just do X? Or here's what I've seen before. And each one of those had a piece of a good idea, but I had a feeling that the best idea was pulling all the good ideas together and figuring out how to tie them together. So we went through a really intensive 13 providers down to a final four presented, and they were presenting for the manager program or the executive program. And in some cases, they proposed for both.
How did you think about evaluating? How did you get the team to come together to make a decision? Because I'm sure they all, you know, proposed great ideas and maybe had different pricing. And like, it was probably very complex to look at these and compare them.
So owing back to my early days in retail and merchandise planning, I've never met a spreadsheet I didn't love. And so I put together a pretty good rubric of how were we going to assess the presentations and or the proposals. We gave I gave some very explicit direction up front. For example, in the manager program, I wanted a train the trainer option. I did not want to be paying external facilitators forever. I have an amazing internal facilitation team. And so that was a deal breaker. I needed to see in the proposal what that looked like. We had some budget components. We asked questions around how would they ensure that their facilitation team matched the diversity of our organization. So we pitched those things out there. Across the whole steering committee, there were two individuals from talent management that across the three of us, very wide-ranging experiences and different opinions. We went through all 13 proposals, assigned a score. In the background, I had that score weighted. So certain things meant more than others. And then we reviewed the score and said, does this make sense? On our scores, here's who we're moving forward. It is. And then I brought the whole steering committee, as well as my leader and our chief learning officer, in to make the final decisions on presentations. Mm. So the big thing was I didn't bring all the people into all the steps. They were, all the data was available to them and they could look at it at any time, but they trusted that we were making the right kind of whittling down decisions.
You also had very specific requirements so you could see that people are, or organizations are responding to that and meeting your requirements. And then you could make sure that as you get to those final few, you can bring in your CLO and other leaders or sponsors to get buy-in and alignment around the whole thing.
100%. And I could bring them in at that point to say, oh, that's a cool new idea. Whereas, and that was important to me. I wanted to show what could a modern contemporary leadership development solution look like. And so it was, sometimes you can get there a little quicker by them hearing it from other people over time.
I'm curious, you know, every company is in different spectrum on this, the build versus buy. It sounds like you've got a lot of resources to be able to facilitate and build some things internally, but you also wanted to go partner to bring in some outside providers to bring their expertise. How did you think about that as well? Because I'm sure you could have potentially expanded your team and said, oh, we're going to build all of this internally, or you could have outsourced everything, but it sounds like you took somewhat of a hybrid approach.
Yes. And I was recently thinking about this. Honestly, the biggest thing came down to time. So I told you we were rapidly building all these other parts of the portfolio too. And so we were creating these high potential solutions while also refining that clinical leadership academy and really scaling that operations academy. So we didn't have a situation where we could take all the internal talent and focus here. We also really strongly believe and still believe for that executive program that outside in voices are really important. And really, there's a credibility piece there that we have amazing facilitators and I think great strategists, but there's something nice when our team gets to hear from and engage with executive coaches and experts that are also talking to other companies. And so where we prioritized ultimately was that train the trainer approach for the manager program. It's fully run in-house by our side now. We spent the money on our team to be certified in some of the Blanchard tools, and Blanchard's still a partner, but we fully execute that. And then we continue to bring in those outside voices for the executive program.
Got it. So yeah, you're bringing in the outside voices. It sounds like it's co-created with partners. And then to the extent you can, you're running it internally so that you have more control over that process.
Yes. And every partner will tell you the thing about working with me is you never have to wonder what I'm thinking. And so there is a great co-creation and a great like collaboration, but I also have a really strong point of view that's based on my stakeholders internally and what I know about our entire talent management picture and our business evolution, and not just solving for learning objectives in one 2-hour content session.
And what's the mix of this program, the breakdown, when you think about like virtual, on-demand, in-person, everybody's trying to figure out what the right mix is for programs these days or journeys that you're bringing people on?
So for both of our high potential programs, we are prioritizing a bit of a white glove approach. We do think it's important that we pull these emerging leaders or these next generation leaders together to strengthen their network. And so for both of the experiences, we launch with a live event, either 2 or 3 days, where everyone comes together, and being present, being able to attend the live event is a requirement to be selected for the program. And in the middle portion of both programs is virtual. And so some of it involves some self-paced or peer-led work. And then some of it is work, a more workshop approach or small group coaching or one-on-one coaching. And then we again conclude with 2 days in a live event. What I also make the commitment to is I realize you are walking away from your day-to-day job to come in and do this. You're arranging for your kids. You're missing, parts of your life. So my commitment to the group is I will never waste your time. I will make sure that when you're here and we've got you in that seat, that we are contributing to the highest value that you can get.
And then in between that time, they're doing more virtual and on-demand type activities?
So we do a couple of things. In our manager program, scattered throughout, we do situational leadership, conversational capacity, and innovation mindset. Those are our learning modules. We then have small group coaching that goes along with that. And then we also have something where our small group, so out of the 50 people in the cohort, we put them together in groups of 10. They have a project where they have to work together to understand how across the 10 of them, do they represent the end-to-end value chain of the company? So a lot of times that means going from our internal IT solution all the way to a nurse manager that's taking calls from our members. And they have to understand across those 10, what are the inputs and outputs that how they impact each other? And then in our executive program, similar, we actually just shifted to the only virtual things they do are their small group coaching, and then they get one-on-one executive coaching and their project work. We just added a second or a third live session, and that's where we really dive into their leadership point of view. Mm. And so our project in the executive program has absolutely nothing to do with our direct Elevance Health business. It's a community-based action learning project where we partner with organizations in the Indianapolis area whose mission supports our mission of improving the health of humanity. And we basically, I call it like leaders on loan. We loan out our great brains to go help these nonprofits, these other groups do really extraordinary things.
I saw you posted about that on LinkedIn recently. I thought that was really cool. I wanted to ask you about that. So I'm really, it's interesting to hear like, hey, you're giving them projects to work on. They're not necessarily Elevance projects. This is actually an opportunity to make an impact in our community by helping nonprofit groups that wouldn't really have the resources to hire talent like this, unless they were just really altruistic and wanted to go, you know, take a pay cut or something to work for a nonprofit. Also on LinkedIn, I saw you posted an article about the importance of infusing adventure into leadership development programs. So how and where did you infuse adventure there?
Yes, I try not to be an agent of chaos, but I do think as we look at what it means to learn, to grow as a leader, there's got to be a sense of unknown. There's got to be a sense of I'm going to take the next step and I don't know what's coming. And so, for example, in the manager program, the project they work on over 5 to 6 months is one, I describe it in one page to them. And it is essentially your job is to visually present or thematically present. How do your jobs connect upstream and downstream? We don't provide slides. I don't give them here's a strategic thinking toolkit. It's you go explore because their learning, their growth of business acumen is in the exploration. The presentation is just the output, right? But what they learn is when they sit and have those meetings and talk about how their jobs connect. And it freaks some of them out, right? Like we've done two cohorts. And the second cohort, I remember, told me, they're like, well, we kept waiting for you to just give us all the answers. I was like, we don't do that in this program. So that's a sense of go figure it out. In the executive program, look, I've got individuals that are out working with domestic violence organization. And none of them are coming from a background of they're not experts in domestic violence or transitional housing. And so they've got to go in and focus on being good leaders, asking the right questions, connecting what they're hearing to the other things they're hearing and that pieces of the whole. And these are high performing, high potential people. It's an adventure when we say, go out, we don't know what your project's going to be, you'll figure it out. I mean, that's daunting for some people. The outcome though, the personal learning that you gain is huge. I had the opportunity to participate in a program like this around cervical cancer screening and prevention in Tanzania. I am not an expert, but I came back and all of a sudden, as a leader, I have a better understanding of how to ask powerful questions because of that experience. Mm. And that wouldn't have come had there not been that adventure.
Yeah, no doubt. In addition to these programs, you also have had a speaker series. You bring in keynote speakers to speak with all of your leaders. I know this because I was lucky enough to be invited to speak to some 1,200 leaders, however many it was, on owning your career and leadership. Tell me about how that fits into everything.
So that is something that was, if you go back to the journey of how we built out the portfolio, that was something that we could easily stand up and get going in 2021 while we were still designing other things. And it gave our team, and most importantly, our chief learning officer, the opportunity to talk directly to our leadership audience. And it gave us an opportunity to infuse some new voices. And so when you and I worked together, Andy, on the speaker series, you'll remember I was really pushing for disruptive voices, people mm-hmm. that were bringing a different angle or a new angle. And so I would say that's something we do. It augments all of the other aspects of leadership development. And at the bare minimum, it's 1 hour a month that a leader can be selfish and invest in themselves. And that's even how we brand it at times and talk about it.
Yeah, it was a great experience. And it's cool how you're bringing in different voices. And like you said, disruptive. The last thing I want to ask you about is you mentioned a couple times the idea of connecting the leadership programs to your diversity mission and programs. How does that all connect in so that you make sure that beyond going beyond diversity, that the programs are inclusive? It's not just kind of the same old people that you are giving, you know, equal opportunities to different types of leaders from different backgrounds, and it advances the organization's mission around DEI.
Yes. I think the easiest way we've been able to accomplish that is our talent strategy team was involved from the beginning in the steering committee and the core team. And so they've been linked right alongside with me with how we're building the solution. And then they're able to appropriately advocate during the talent planning processes and during the nominations window to make sure that we're thinking about the broadest spectrum of leaders. And they also have a better view than they might have 3 or 4 years ago about what all is available in the portfolio. I think where organizations get in trouble is when they only have one or two solutions. And so it starts to feel like the last lifeboat off the Titanic. And I really encourage teams and really work to say, well, what do you need first? These other things are always going to be there. But if you immediately go to the biggest, sexiest hypo program, you've maxed out your opportunities within the organization. So how do we grow you into your development experiences while also remembering my solutions are only part of the picture? So what are you doing with your 360 feedback? What are you doing with your mentorship? Are you a sponsor? Like all of those things have to happen too.
Fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that is all built in, that those things are being considered. And I'm sure it's a work in progress, something that's always being improved as well.
It is by no means perfect. And we are coming up on our first cohorts from 2023 are reaching the 1 year mark in our hypo solutions. And so they will be getting their post program 360. And so that's going to be that next test of now that they get that post program 360, do they take it to their talent strategy partner? Do they take it to their skip level leader? Like, how do they keep driving their learning through and how do we keep encouraging them and making it easy for them to do
that? Yeah, I was going to ask what sort of impact or results have you been seeing so far? I know it's fairly early.
Well, so give me like 6 more weeks. We are just now wrapping up or in the middle of our success case interviews. So we've borrowed from the Brinkerhoff method of success case method. And we track across all of our programs, you know, level 1 and 2 evaluation, level 3 evaluation. And then we use the success case approach to gather really meaningful on the job application. But what we are seeing and is for sure 100% or 95 to 100% agreement that our participants in both programs, manager and executive, are able to apply the learning on the job. And they're saying that by applying that, they've seen higher performance or outcomes from their team. We're seeing that they are better positioned to engage in a strategic way, to determine priorities. And then, for example, we just started our second cohort of the executive program last week. And they're seeing just that group after 1 2-day session, there was about a 65 to 70% of them said that their understanding and readiness to apply their leadership shifts had grown to a strong or significant amount from pre-session to post-session.
Excellent. So, yeah.
That one thing we built, sorry to cut you off, but I am proud of this work that we built a measurement strategy for the entire leadership portfolio alongside all of this. And while we were fortunate to be able to bring in some experts to teach and train, it doesn't cost any money to deploy some evals, to take that eval data and do some interviews. And so it's an easy thing that anybody could really start looking at. And it builds your credibility.
Right. And it all starts at the beginning with asking the question, hey, what impact do you want to make? What behaviors do you want to change? What do you want to measure? And then planning to measure that in the end.
That same impact map that the steering committees helped me create in February 2023 is still the one that I pull through the entire program and determines all my measurement.
Excellent. Well, Jennifer, this has been great. There's so many more things I know we can talk about with this, and we'll have to keep in touch because I definitely want to hear in 6 weeks or so what sort of results you're getting back. For those that are working on leadership development programs, maybe want to get in touch with you. I know they can find you on LinkedIn and probably reach out.
Definitely. I would love to. Love to chat.
Awesome. And we'll have to get you into our community for a call to dig into some of these details more. I think that'll be really fun as well.
Yes, let's get nerdy with it. I'm down for that. Get nerdy.
Get nerdy. All right, Jennifer, thank you so much. This has been awesome. Thank you for sharing everything. This has been really helpful, I know, for a lot of people that are working on leadership development programs. And we still got our bonus Q&A. I'm looking forward to asking more questions there. So stay tuned for that. But thank you again for sharing. This has been fantastic.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, that will do it for my conversation with Jennifer Butler at Elevance Health. I hope you enjoyed that. You got some value from it. You took some notes. I definitely did. They have really invested a lot of time and resources and effort into the leadership development programs there. 3 tiers, again, for the director plus level, that mid level, and those emerging leaders, and the names kind of changing on those. But you get the idea. As she mentioned, it's like the 101, 201, 301, and they're even thinking about building the 401. I thought it was interesting that even though they've built out a robust team, they knew they wouldn't be able to build all these programs on their own. And so Jennifer said she put out an RFP that they brought in several different potential partners, had them sort of submit proposals on this, evaluated what was there, narrowed it down to the top 4, and then had them present to a steering committee who were really aligned on the vision and the need for the program, and then chose the one that was the best fit, or even had 2 of them partner because they brought different things to the table and were willing to partner with each other on it. So there's different ways to get creative with this. I know everybody's in different places on the build everything internally or outsource everything, but a lot of you are kind of in between. And so I thought that would be helpful to share that. Definitely interesting for me to hear as someone who's coming from the outside. Speaking of that, if you are working on things like career development, leadership development, you want to bring an outside speaker or provider, I'm here for you. I speak a lot in organizations about owning your career, as well as owning performance and achieving goals, about modern leadership, about the most valuable skills of the future. And recently I gave a keynote on embracing uncertainty and turning challenges into opportunities, one that I absolutely loved and I'm looking forward to bringing to other organizations in the near future. So if that's something you're interested in, reach out to me, andy@andystorch.com. And finally, I want to remind you that our podcast is sponsored by the Talent Development Think Tank Conference and Community, something that I personally have been running since 2019. It's been 5 years of running the Talent Development Think Tank, and I've loved all the great connections, all the people we've helped. It's been a fun journey. We're bringing the conference back later this year. If you like attending conferences, especially smaller, more intimate conferences where you can really get to know people instead of like the cattle calls, like the big one that starts with an A, come check us out. If you can't make it to the conference, you just want to connect with great people, join our community, or do both. I highly suggest it. I'm a big fan of both. We're going to have Jennifer come speak in our community very soon, and hopefully I can convince her to come to the conference as well. We've already got some great speakers lined up. Our website, again, is tdtt.us, as in Talent Development Think Tank, TDTT. And if you're joining the community, you can use the code HOTSEAT, HOTSEAT, for 10% off. All right. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate you. I hope you're getting value from this. I hope that you will pass it along to others. And I hope that you have a phenomenal day.